In Iran, there's this thing called Divar.
It's an Iranian version of Craigslist.
It's kind of like Craigslist. Recently, we called up Fatima Jamalpour at her home.
I'm a reporter based in Tehran.
And she said that she's noticed that people have started posting all kinds of things for sale on Divar, even their pets.
For example, one of those said, I bought my purebred Pomeranian dog, 5 million tamen.
That's about $1,500.
But now I'm selling him for 4 million tamen as I'm going to immigrate.
A purebred Pomeranian. That's so funny. Oh, and sad. When Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, he also reimposed tough sanctions beginning in August of 2018, sending Iran's economy into a tailspin. And as a result, some folks are cutting and running.
Another one that really surprised me was about selling her unused cosmetics to get money for immigration.
So Fatima's been keeping an eye on the property listings.
And then I saw this ad. Two stories. Unused. Close to the metro. Selling due to immigration.
So two stories close to the metro. That sounds like a really fabulous apartment, right?
It's not an apartment he's selling. It's his grave.
Wow. Huh. So Fatima gave this guy a call, and he was super nice. He agreed to talk to her as long as we didn't use his name.
People are nervous about talking to reporters, especially international media.
And they decided to meet at the cemetery, the one near the metro.
So we met this cemetery. It's a really big one. People over there reciting prayers from Quran. And that's actually near to Ayatollah Khomeini's grave.
Ayatollah Khomeini is the one from the 1979 revolution, the country's former supreme leader.
And he kind of made a joke, like, you can say hello to Ayatollah Khomeini on your way, and then you turn left down here.
Well, it's very convenient.
He told me he used to have a car dealership. You know, the U.S. sanction affected car manufacturers in Iran a lot because they can't import the car parts. And he had to sell his dealership, and now he wants to join his family members who lives overseas in Canada.
So does that mean, because of the sanctions, that he's not actually getting the cars to be able to sell them? It's a supply issue?
Yeah.
I asked Fatima if she had a sense of how he felt about selling his grave.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot.
He said his wife doesn't want him to sell.
But he told her, I don't believe in anything at all anymore. Although it's an Iranian soil, it's just a grave.
Shocking as his story may be, the gentleman Fatima spoke to isn't alone. He told her about a guy who was trying to sell a whole family plot, 24 graves in all.
And he said, I haven't been able to sell this single grave, let alone 24 graves.
Because after so many years of economic pain, some Iranians are just done.
I think if you sell your house, that's one thing. You are saying goodbye. But if you sell your grave, you're basically saying goodbye for eternity.
I'm Lacey Healy, and on this episode of Things That Go Boom, we'll ask if Trump's sanctions are working.
Steel, copper, the oil is essentially dried up.
Because as we looked around,
I really believe that Iran would like to make a deal.
We realized
we're not looking for regime change. I just want to make that clear.
While some Iranians are leaving the country's troubled waters, others who we'll hear from on this episode are riding the wave.
Whatever doesn't kill you just makes you stronger. So far, we are not dead.
We're supposed to learn from our own mistakes, but other people's errors can be instructive too. From efforts to control the weather that went disastrously awry, to the untimely death of the Segway boss, history is a treasure trove of mishaps and meltdowns that can teach us all. I'm Tim Harford, host of Cautionary Tales, the podcast that mines the greatest fiascos of the past for their most valuable lessons. Listen to Cautionary Tales wherever you get your podcasts.
In Tehran, there's this fancy new burger chain called Frikadelle, which is German for hamburger.
And thanks God, since we don't have McDonald's here, there is more room for us to be more creative.
Ali Reza Jeromi is one of the partners at the IT firm that started this place. And it kind of looks like a Shake Shack. Wood tables, metal chairs, hipster chic. Despite a countrywide ban, Iran is really intensely into social media. Sort of like the rest of us. So, Frikadelle is a burger chain built for the Instagram era, complete with an app and a gimmicky photo-friendly box that keeps your ingredients separate until you're ready to eat.
Of course, you know, pickles, nice and fresh tomatoes, and jalapenos.
There are a few unique Iranian options.
Iranian, beautiful, and good smell of basil, which we call them rehan.
But basically, it's just a fancy burger joint.
Special frikadelle sauce. And you know the secret of our success.
The app lets you name a burger after yourself, and then your friends can order it too. You can even promote your burger on social media for points.
I will choose a name for it. I'll put it after my own name, Ali Reza. And then, boom, it's finished.
Since sanctions, Ali Reza says they've had to change things up a little. Switch from imported ingredients to locally sourced, but no big deal. That's trendy. The impact of sanctions is a little bit more obvious in the price of Ali Reza's meal. Burger, fries, and a drink.
In dollar, it's 35,000 tumans.
It's a good value in Tehran, but because the value of Iran's currency has plunged, in dollars, it's really a steal.
I think, you know, $2, yeah. For $2, yeah, nobody can compete with that.
Trump reinstated sanctions after he left the nuclear deal. You might remember his Game of Thrones-style tweet featuring a dark, stormy poster and a pensive Trump with the warning, sanctions are coming. Game of Thrones' creator, George R.R. Martin, actually responded on Twitter. He told his followers to vote. He's no fan of Trump. But the sanctions have come.
Donald Trump calls it a maximum pressure campaign to force Iran back to the nuclear negotiation table. Iran's foreign minister calls it economic terrorism.
In November, the U.S. reimposed sanctions on Iran's energy, shipping, and financial sectors. And in May, exemptions ended for countries still buying oil, Iran's lifeline.
Now they're pulling back because they've got serious economic problems.
Iran's economy is feeling the pain, and so are its people. Their currency, the rial, has lost about 60% of its value against the dollar since Trump reinstated sanctions, which makes it really hard to import anything. Fatima told us that medicines like Prozac and some cancer drugs are almost impossible to come by. And inflation is galloping. A container of ice cream that cost 8,000 tumans 6 months ago costs 40,000 today. And Fatima says there are stories in the news straight out of the Prohibition era about people dying from drinking homemade alcohol because they can't afford to buy imported brands. But Ali Reza says the sanctions are like a tsunami.
It's all about your experience, that you're going to run toward the wave or running toward the hills. If you're a surfer, if you know how to deal with the wave, you're going to know to take that and use all of its forces to enjoy.
Ali Reza is not a surfer, but he is an architectural engineer. He spent 16 years overseas in Dubai, Singapore, and Malaysia. And he wanted to bring his expertise home. So when the Iran deal was struck in 2015, it was the final nudge.
If you want to know how Iranians feel about this deal, look no further than the streets of Tehran.
It is like, you know, ocean of positivity and high hopes. So therefore, yeah, I was really happy at that time.
Then Trump reimposed sanctions. But Ali Reza's scrappy. So he's been paddling straight into the tsunami, like when Frikadelle was suddenly priced out of certain ingredients.
After sanctions, we realized, okay, even for a chili powder, we need to go to some other country. Ridiculous thing. So how hard could it be?
He turned to a friend who just so happens to have a small business cultivating cacti in a greenhouse.
So I told him, how about not doing the cactus and doing no jalapenos for us? Now we started growing jalapenos. So we hopefully we started to know to replace all of those things.
Then there was the kitchen equipment, stoves and hoods. They used to import them from the U.S., but now, Ali Reza says, ever heard of reverse engineering?
A hood or I don't know, a grill is not the rocket science. It has nothing to do with the nuclear science.
These days, he buys his equipment locally. He's even looking toward exports.
The best thing that we have in abundance is ideas. It's not oil. It is our manpower. It's our brain power. Any war, any conflict has some unpleasant moments. But whatever doesn't kill you just makes you stronger. So far, we are not dead.
Iran's used to dealing with this kind of pain. The country's been under increasingly crippling sanctions since the revolution in 79. In response to everything from Iran's state sponsorship of terrorism to its activities in the Persian Gulf and, of course, its nuclear program. The only brief break in those sanctions, from 81 to 87, just so happened to coincide with the devastation of the Iran-Iraq War.
You have no idea what does it mean when you are living in a city and missiles are coming over your head. We experienced many harsh and hard things. But at the same time, we learned that if we want to have a better life, we better move.
For financial institutions or the Financial Crimes Reporting Hotline, press 5.
Sanctions policy is damn near impossible to understand. So, at some point, we decided we needed to call in the experts.
For information about travel to Cuba, licensing, or the SDN list, press 6.
As in, physically call the Treasury Department, the sanctions people, because we had a problem. Which is that, to our total embarrassment, our producer Ruth and I realized that, under sanctions, we weren't actually sure if we could pay Fatima for her reporting.
If you are calling for information about the Russia-Ukraine sanctions, press 2.
So we asked a lawyer, and they told us probably no.
If you are calling for information regarding the Iran sanctions program, such as transferring non-commercial personal remittances to or from Iran, please press 4.
But we wanted to know for sure. So we thought, can we just dial up the Office of Foreign Assets Control?
Hi there. My name is Lacey Healy. I'm a journalist, so I'm recording this. Our lawyer said to err on the side of caution. We're just trying to get a clear answer from you guys. So if you could please give me a call back anytime.
We figure it's a long shot, and the automated system isn't exactly encouraging. But to our total shock, it's only a couple of hours before we get a call back.
Good morning. This is a return call from OFAC at the Treasury Department regarding a question about paying journalists in Iran.
This very nice guy calls, and he sends us to the exact paragraph in the law that we need.
And I would look at paragraph A, 31 CFR.
He also just straight up answers our question.
It does allow for compensation of supporting broadcast or technical personnel.
So why was our lawyer so scared?
This is a beautiful example of why these sanctions are having a very outsized impact, because people who don't understand them very well opt for caution when they may not need to.
That's Elizabeth Rosenberg, or Liz. She's the director of the Energy Economics and Security Program at the Center for a New American Security. And she was a senior official at Treasury under Obama. She's young, younger than her impressive resume would suggest. And as we're walking to her office, I noticed we have the same blazer, but she's wearing it way better than I ever have. She says she can absolutely appreciate that the lawyers we work with, who are media lawyers, might not be up on the intricacies of sanctions law. But the point is that the U.S. currency has awesome economic power.
So when the United States makes rules about who can have access to the dollar, everyone has to sit up.
Here's the thing. Sanctions are very much not my bag. As a political science major, it was all I could do to make it through my college econ courses. So the way I like to understand sanctions
is that once upon a time, I sold pie. My husband and I actually ran a farmer's market pie stand called Dough Uprising. And for the sake of argument, let's just say we stuck with the stand. And it grew so huge that soon, we were hawking our pies all over the world. I sell pie, but I probably couldn't have sold my pie to Iran because I would have had to conduct the transaction in dollars.
Our banks are the most important banks for the whole global system. Everybody uses the dollar.
And under the most common type of sanctions called primary sanctions, many of which were still in place even with the Iran deal, that's a no-no. It raises the bar for companies that want to do business, even when those companies sell legal things like medical supplies and pie.
The problem is that the cost of due diligence and making sure that they strictly comply with sanctions laws, the cost is just too great. Essentially, the entire global banking community looks at these measures and how expensive it is to handle the payments for Iran and says, no, thank you.
But now that my pie shop's gone global, it's inspired a whole bunch of spin-off shops worldwide. And there's a really great one in France that theoretically can sell its pie to Iran. Except there's this thing called secondary sanctions. And the U.S. uses secondary sanctions to punish companies in other countries for violating U.S. sanctions laws regardless of the currency involved.
And what that means is that the U.S. government tells the whole world, if you do business with someone on our list, on our blacklist, we're going after you too. And that's where so many U.S. allies and partners have gotten very angry and upset and frustrated.
That pie shop in France is pissed because people in Iran love pie.
Because they say, why are you pointing your finger at us? You should be pointing your finger at the Iranians. Isn't that the point of your policy?
When Trump pulled out of the deal, the European allies we'd depended on to bring Iran to the negotiating table were like that pie shop in France. They were not pleased. So they started working on an alternative system that theoretically might allow them to circumvent the U.S. and facilitate trade between Europe and Iran. It's called the Special Purpose Vehicle, or INSTEX. Liz says, as an operational matter, INSTEX isn't working.
It's not actually moving money, and it's not a good substitute for a formal banking relationship or even a hawala.
I had to look that up. It's a system for moving money that's traditionally used in the Muslim world.
Or carrying a lot of cash.
But Liz says Europe's decision to pursue INSTEX is indicative of a larger problem.
We're pushing our allies to contemplate how to get further from the United States, how to conduct a natural experiment about alternative payment systems so they can get away from the United States. That is terrible for the United States.
And they're not the only ones. China, India, and Russia are all working to develop systems for international trade that are less reliant on the American dollar.
It's not an ill unto itself, but if we have less money, we will have a less powerful military, we will have less meaningful and powerful technologies, and a strong economy is the engine of our national security, and if we turn that engine down or start to break it and make it less reliable, then we are diminishing our national security across many different arenas.
Which seems like a pretty big gamble on the part of the U.S., one that might not pay off.
And right now, it looks like the United States is both having an economic effect on Iran. It may be succeeding in that respect, in its sanctions, but it is not changing the calculus of the Iranian leadership, and it is definitely not compelling capitulation or regime change.
By most estimates, fewer than a quarter of the country strongly supports the supreme leader to start with, but they're not likely to trade him in for the U.S.
Iran and its resistance economy history seem very likely to dig in and wait out the Trump policy.
Back in Tehran, Alireza's doing just that, digging in.
It is not a very pleasant, you know, moment, but I believe we can get through it.
But he also feels slighted. And he's not the only one. Alireza says a lot of people feel betrayed by the U.S. decision to pull out of the nuclear deal. They aren't waiting on their government or the U.S. to make things better.
The reaction and the feeling is, wait a minute. So far, we thought if we sit with the world, if we talk to them, and if we reach to a conclusion, if we reach to an understanding, then we can rely on it.
Even before Trump pulled out of the deal, public opinion polls conducted in Iran for the University of Maryland showed that a majority of Iranians believed that Iran hadn't received most of the promised benefits. But they were also against renegotiation. Instead, 2 in 3 said that the whole experience showed that it's not worthwhile for Iran to make concessions at all. Because it can't have confidence that world powers will honor their side of an agreement. In addition to his demands, his 12 points, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has insisted time and again that the administration's current strategy is to support the Iranian people.
I have a message for the people of Iran. The United States hears you. The United States supports you. The United States is with you.
He even gave a major speech on the subject at the Ronald Reagan Library in California.
It's America's hope that the next 40 years of Iran's history will not be marked by repression and fear, but with freedom and fulfillment for the Iranian people. Thank you.
But the conditions on the ground in Iran don't seem to be helping the Trump administration accomplish its goals.
And to be honest with you, it was not just for us. I think even Americans need to reconsider their methods. I think now we are facing it, the international society, that we don't know whether we have to trust them or not, regardless where are we from.
Instead, they seem to be reinforcing a view that many Iranians already have. Alireza is a fan of American television, and he wanted us to watch this old clip from The Daily Show to help us understand.
I had come to Iran to learn what this country we've been cut off from for decades was all about.
In the clip, Jason Jones quizzes Iranians on U.S. history.
Before that Bush, it was Mr. Reagan.
Mr. Reagan, yeah.
And before him?
Carter, it was Mr. Carter.
One man names the U.S. presidents all the way back to Nixon.
And before Ford, the Watergate happened.
Yeah, what was his name?
His name, it was Nixon. Yeah,
it
was
Nixon, yeah.
Americans, as you might expect, don't do so well.
What's the name of a country in the Middle East that starts with I and is not Iraq?
I don't know.
I-R-A-N?
India.
Iran.
Iran?
Doesn't ring a bell? The country of Iran.
I never heard of it.
That clip was in 2009, so it's probably fair to point out this isn't a Trump thing. It's an American thing.
As proud as you are, we are the same. As patriotic as you are, we are the same. As much as you love your army, we have the same feeling. As much as you love your mother, as much as you love your baseball, as much as you love your pie, as much as you love anything in your life, we have the same things.
So when we pulled out of the nuclear deal, some Iranians were like, yeah, that makes sense. America's just tone deaf.
We are very familiar with what's going on there. The question is, do you know what's going on here? That's it.
And I know so many people from Iran. These are great people. It has a chance to be a great country.
Today, the Trump administration still says it supports the Iranian people. Recently, they even offered to negotiate without preconditions.
What they should be doing is calling me up, sitting down, we can make a deal, a fair deal. We just don't want them to have nuclear weapons.
But not long after, the administration slapped on a new round of sanctions that target the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, which Trump has also labeled a terrorist group. Iran's leaders weren't surprised. A spokesman for the foreign ministry said, look, you only have to wait a week to see that the president's offer to negotiate is hollow. In an effort to support just one Iranian person, we did eventually send payment to the journalist we work with in Iran, Fatima. But it was held up. We still don't know when she'll get paid. Next time on Things That Go Boom, we'll talk to Jason Rezaian, a correspondent for The Washington Post who spent 544 days in an Iranian prison because of the nuclear deal.
We were a needle point right in the middle of these really massive geopolitical shifts. It's fucking crazy. And we're talking specifically about taking hostages. States don't do that. Pirates do that. Terrorist groups do that.
Things That Go Boom is a production of PRX and Inkstick Media. We also have a weekly global security newsletter called Critical State. Head over to inkstickmedia.com to sign up and visit us on social at Inkstick Media. Our show is produced by Ruth Morris. Catherine Fink is our assistant producer, and Mary Beth Kirshner is our story whisperer. Darian Shulman composes our music, and our engineer is Robin Wise. A huge thank you to John Barth and Eric Ferrari for their review, and to the Carnegie Corporation of New York, Plashers Fund, and N Square for making our show possible.
What looks like a K for us is pronounced like an H for you.
Yes. That's che, but this che.